Hi, I'm Maya Grant.
And I'm Rebecca Cohen.
And this is The Sauce, the culture and politics podcast where we drink cocktails and ruin the stuff you love.
How are you doing this week, Maya?
I'm trying to do too much, man. Oh. I'm trying to do too fucking much. But I got to go to New York this past weekend, and it's a very different city than the one that I lived in back in the late 90s. But I had a wonderful time.
Why were you in New York?
One of my mentors was performing, and she's in her mid-80s at this point. So I feel like I have to make sure that I can go see her whenever I can see her.
That's understandable.
Yeah.
And what are you drinking for this episode?
I am drinking a hot toddy, and I'm finding very satisfying. A good lemon, honey, whiskey, hot water, hot toddy. It's awesome.
Is it a little early in the year for that?
No, because the second that it goes under 70 degrees in LA, it is hot toddy weather.
Too cold. Yeah,
it's too cold.
I feel you.
Now, what about you? How are you doing? What are you drinking?
I'm drinking scotch. This time, a good one. This is Ardbeg Kelpie, it's called.
Ooh.
Yeah, Ardbeg Distillery. Each year they put out like a gimmick scotch, basically like a special scotch for that year. This one's called Kelpie. It's named after some kind of legendary kelp monster that I think they made up.
It's a water creature.
Yes.
It's a water creature from the burn.
Exactly. It's pretty fucking diesel though. It's a really nice scotch. I have it because a couple days ago I went to a party that a friend of a friend throws every year called Scotchtoberfest. Yes. And the rule is that you have to bring a bottle of single malt scotch. You can go in with other people. You know, if you have a group of several, you can all go in and buy something more expensive, but it must be scotch and it must be single malt. So my friends and I brought the Kelpie and it didn't get finished. So I had the luck that I got to bring it home and now I'm enjoying it.
One of the things I love, we have these friends who have so many scotches that when they bring you over to their house and get you trashed, after dinner, they make a map of Scotland with their different bottles.
Oh, boy.
They're serious. They're kind of for real.
Yeah, that's hardcore.
It's another level. I'm never going to get at that level.
No, I just drink them. All right. So I forgot to say happy indictment week. Oh, we have so much to gloat about this week, which brings us to the topic that we're going to be discussing. First, we're going to get to some listener feedback. And then after that, we really only have one thing to discuss, which is the developments in the Mueller investigation. And of course, lots has been said about it, but no one's going to talk about it the way you and I would talk about it.
Because we're going to talk about it. We've actually been wanting to do this episode for like a month now. And when all of this news came up that the indictments were coming on Monday, it was like, I guess we're doing it this week.
Right.
But we're specifically going to talk about the Mueller investigation, about narrative pleasure in the Mueller investigation in terms of procedural dramas and the ways in which the reason that the Mueller investigation is so fucking satisfying to watch unfold is because it connects to narrative pleasures that we get from watching procedurals like Law and Order.
First, we do have some listener feedback. In our last episode, we gave a not exactly hot sauce, not exactly weak sauce award to the Dora the Explorer Michael Bay live action extravaganza that is going to be foisted upon our cinemas at some point in the future.
That still makes me laugh so hard.
It's an inherently hilarious concept, made all the more funny by the fact that it's 100% real. But we didn't know if it was a weak sauce or hot sauce. So we did get a suggestion on Twitter, at what Molly said, suggested sweet and sour sauce for that third sauce. I like sweet and sour sauce. Yeah.
I take that. Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like it's apt and I like that it's an actual sauce.
Yes.
And we had another piece of feedback that was an iTunes review This reviewer titled the review Funny and Insouciant and wrote, Rebecca and Maya don't ruin the things we like. They make them better.
Aww.
Isn't that lovely?
Thank you. Yeah,
it's really sweet. That reviewer is Matrim55, who is my husband. So thanks, honey. So, Maya, as you mentioned, the topic that we're about to discuss, looking at the Mueller investigation and how it's unfolded and comparing it to procedural dramas, you actually suggested this a long time ago when we first started talking about you being on the podcast.
Yes.
And we've been putting off actually discussing it because we weren't even sure where to start. There's so much to dive into. But we got a real push this week when the indictments happened. We're like, we better get on this shit right now.
Kind of kicked us in the ass.
It did, which was good because it turns out we have a lot to say about it, surprisingly enough. So let's start by talking about what we mean by procedural dramas.
Procedural is a word that is often used to apply to TV shows or films that are about legal investigations or about police work. But in Hollywood, the word procedural is used to refer to shows like medical shows, mm-hmm. like House. These are all procedurals.
Yeah.
And it's a way that a narrative unfurls. And it's a way that it sets up an expectation in the audience for how things are going to go down in whatever you're watching. So one of the things that I thought was really amazing of you, Rebecca, mm-hmm. was you pulled it apart in terms of what's the difference between a mystery and a procedural, because they can often feel like they're the same thing, because they're both in some ways about some kind of crime or some kind of unknown information that will get uncovered mm-hmm. over the course of the story. But it's different. There's a difference between a mystery and a procedural.
Yeah. I mean, I might say that a procedural is a subset of mystery. It's like a subgenre, but it is its own distinct thing. And the distinction you were making a moment ago is sort of between police procedural versus procedural drama in general, which by no means has to be about police. You know, we all are familiar with the concept of a mystery, which are gratifying to watch on a lot of different levels already. And it's, you know, very standard setup. You have a crime and the narrative focuses on figuring out who's guilty of the crime, who committed the crime. Right there, you already have where procedurals are kind of different, because typically procedurals are similar in that way. But in a procedural, the audience might know who's guilty, might know who that is from the very start. And it's more about watching the investigation unfold than trying to figure out who done it. Mysteries are all about piecing together clues. And usually the mystery features some kind of expert sleuth. They might be professional, but oftentimes they're amateurs, like Miss Marple type of character. They could be a psychologist or a journalist or any other profession than, say, like police or detective. And they have a special talent, right? They have like a special genius for putting together the clues, for uncovering the clues, for interviewing suspects or involved people, and understanding the psychology of the crime and ultimately getting to the answer of who did it.
And in fact, just to jump in, mm-hmm. their conflict. So even when the solitary detective is a private detective, a PI, your typical gumshoe figure.
Yes.
Part of the pleasure is that this guy is outside of the police, and the conflicted relationship with the police is part of the story.
Yes.
That this outsider has a wisdom, has an insight that's bigger than the usual system, and it pisses the policeman off, but it's also useful to the policeman. So you have that tension, this like outsider detective.
Yeah. And mysteries generally tend to be very focused on understanding the crime itself. Like, they're very crime focused in terms of what was the perpetrator's motive. And it's like you're piecing together a little drama there.
And I would argue that the mystery is ultimately about the human emotional why. why did this person murder this person? Now, procedurals are not about the why. They're about the how.
Yes. Procedurals tend to focus more on the investigative process. They show you the legal technicalities. They show you the police techniques, or if they're not police procedurals, the doctor's techniques or whatever the profession may be. And they're really oriented around a sort of realistic or pseudo-realistic following how an investigation would really occur, constrained by whatever regulations or laws or constraints would really be in place, following whatever procedures. I mean, really, the name procedural tells you what it's about. It's more focused on the procedures that are being followed.
And in executing the procedure mm-hmm. as it should be executed.
Yes, executing it well. So where a mystery typically has this one like detective, this sleuth who's kind of a genius, who's a savant at solving mysteries, procedurals are far less character oriented. They tend to have multiple investigators. They don't really delve into their personal lives or their personalities because none of that is really relevant. They follow the protocol correctly and well and intelligently, but it's all about the protocol more so than them as individuals.
One point that you noted, the main character is not the people doing the investigation. The investigation is the main character.
Yes.
And then the actors are playing embodiments of certain skills. You have the talker, the data guy, the tough 800-pound gorilla, the sort of like each of these guys hold a certain skill. And so we get to watch each of them have their moment to shine when the procedure of the investigation requires Mr. Data Guy to come in and be Mr. Data Guy or Mr., you know, good interviewer to be Mr. Interviewer.
Yes. So I think that part of the enjoyment we get out of procedurals generally comes from that pseudo-documentary quality that they have. In fact, the whole concept of the procedural drama, the police procedural, as a subgenre was established in the 1940s or 50s by critics who were looking at films that started coming out post-World War II that they considered to be almost documentary in quality. Like The Naked City from 48 is considered to be like the first police procedural, though it's arguable. But the point being that it was so seemingly authentic. It went out of its way to try to portray police work as accurately as possible so that it gave the impression of a peek behind the scenes, like you were really seeing what actually happens in a police investigation in real life.
And so, and that's continued to the present day. You have the police procedural, which of course the biggest example or the most sort of impactful example is Law and Order.
Sure.
And its many spinoffs. You also have the lawyer procedural, something like The Good Wife. You have the medical procedural, which is something like House MD or any of those sort of hospital shows, Chicago Hope, whatever. Every episode, there is some medical ailment that has to be solved. And the team of doctors fucking figures it out.
There's also like CSI, which they're not technically police, right? They're forensic investigators.
And you also have the journalism procedural. Where it's about the intrepid reporters uncovering the story through their journalistic techniques as opposed to their police techniques.
Yes.
And part of the pleasure of watching it, so we're talking about like what's the pleasure of the procedural? Why are these shows so successful? Why in some ways are these shows the bulk of what we see in terms of scripted TV shows?
Yes, they're so popular on television.
And if you could turn anything into a procedural, you could be like, okay, this is going to be the like fitness procedural, like whatever. There's certain psychological procedurals. Like we want that narrative structure within the hour. We want to go from A to B in that way.
I feel like a big part of that is that it's really comforting to believe that there's this system that has things under control, that you don't need a genius investigator. You just need the police and they will show up and they will do step A, step B, step C. They will go through their procedure and they will find that criminal. Like, the criminal may elude them at first, but order will be restored because ultimately these procedures will work.
Yes.
It's very comforting.
And these investigators will diligently apply the procedure to the problem to uncover whatever is unknown.
It's true. The investigators are always portrayed as diligent and thorough and committed, which is nice. Nice to think. Yeah. And it's also nice to think that the truth is knowable, right? That
yes.
It's not just that the truth exists, but that there's a way to figure it out. And it doesn't take somebody special.
So this is the basic system that we're laying out.
Yes.
This is what the procedural is. These are the pleasures of the procedural. And this is a narrative form that I think is so deeply embedded in us as viewers that it's very much at play currently in the news. By the way, I just want to mention, I think that where the show Scandal kind of fucking fell off the rails, like went crazy, is because the first season, it was a procedural. It was a procedural about scandal management, where you have each of the characters who are part of this team with each of their skills solving these problems. And when it turned into a soap opera and it lost that sort of grounding in the procedural, I think it's where it fell apart.
I think that's actually true of a lot of shows. I remember like NYPD Blue in the later seasons got more and more into the personal lives of the cops. And you're like, I don't give a shit about that. Just give me an interesting little crime story. Even the show ER, remember ER with George Clooney?
Oh, yeah.
Back when he was a TV star. That was a medical show. It was a medical drama. It was not technically a procedural in my mind. But each little plot had a procedural element to it because medical diagnosis is inherently a procedural, right? Like looking at the symptoms and following the steps to come to a diagnosis, it lends itself so perfectly. So each little subplot was kind of a procedural and it was all about that. Although there were also stories behind each patient and what was going on, and there was more to it than that. But the more it became a soap opera, the more it became about the doctors and nurses and their relationships with each other, the less interesting it got.
You know, and I'm even going to add something that kind of stretches the definition of procedural, but I think it applies. I think that the first season of Sex and the City, I think Sex and the City started off as sort of a social commentary procedural, where you sort of break down this question about how these strange people work in Manhattan. You get to some kind of solution. Each of the women has a different approach that sort of gets you in there.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Then it turned into the soap opera. And that's, I think, you know, there are still good moments, but I feel like that first season was a social drama procedural.
I'm loving that take because it's a whole inquiry-based narrative, right?
Each
yes. episode starts with Carrie posing a question about yes. life in New York, about relationships mostly. There is a procedural element there. I never really thought about it that way.
And in the first season, whenever she had a question, you would cut to all of these different people having their opinions on it. Because
yeah, the little like Vox Populi thing where
right.
they speak
and it's
to the camera.
You're supposed to know that she's kind of a sexual journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some ways, this is her being like a journalist of her city. And then when all of that stuff went away, there's something that I always missed about that. When it just became about her and her friends and their dramas with each other, that pleasure of like, oh, they're going to know, they're going to get to the bottom of something went away. Disappointing.
I'm going to have to rewatch that entire show now through a new lens.
So then what are our favorite procedurals, Rebecca?
Maybe this is an obvious choice, but mine is The Wire.
Gotta love it.
I mean, come on. The Wire, in a way, it's like the apotheosis. It's like the pinnacle of what a procedural can be. But at the same time, it subverts the procedural in a lot of ways and undermines a lot of the themes and pleasures of the procedural. And so what I mean by that is, spoilers, if you haven't watched The Wire, you're behind the times. I can't make any excuses for you.
If you haven't watched The Wire, then I'm sorry, we don't care.
Yeah.
But just suck it up. Like yeah. that, then there's something wrong with you.
Go watch it. It's like five seasons, then come back and listen to the rest. Okay.
The fifth season doesn't exist. You just have to watch the first four seasons.
Fair point. Watch the first four. So obviously, it incredibly follows the model of what a procedural should be, in that it follows the police as they investigate crime. And it has that wonderful quality where we know who the perpetrators are, but the police don't. We, as the audience, it's not a whodunit. It's a how are the police going to do it? It follows the investigation with attention to all the details of how they're able to get the various warrants that they need, which is typical of a procedural, right? The police have to work within the limitations of police work and, you know, constitutionality. They follow police procedures like so authentically, or I should say authentically seeming, because what the fuck do I know about it? But it sure seemed really genuine. And in that way, it's like the perfect procedural. It's documentary-esque. It's so detailed. It draws you in. You, like you were describing earlier, you have characters who are specialists in different areas, and each contributes what they can do to the investigation. So the way that it undermines procedurals and sort of subverts the whole subgenre is in that ultimately, here come the real big spoilers, no matter what the police do on this show, it's never really going to matter. That comfort that you get from the procedural of knowing that the police have their methods and they are diligent and they will ultimately solve this crime and everything will be okay is completely undermined on The Wire, because even though the police are incredibly intelligent and diligent, they're going up against a bureaucracy that is organized and positioned and motivated to never let them really fix things. And they're going up against criminal syndicates that are connected to that bureaucracy in ways that go way above and beyond what the police have the power to do anything about.
And that have their own bureaucracies. And there isn't the sort of good guy, bad guy thing. But I want to talk about my favorite moment of The Wire's sort of play with the procedural, where they're both doing the form and undermining the form, is the last 5 episodes of season 2. Season 2 is like the dock worker season. It's a little bit of a weird season because they have to spend, they didn't know they were going to get a season 2. Mm. So they spend the first 4 episodes kind of, quote, getting the gang back together. And it's a little like lumpy and awkward. But the last stretch of it, the criminals, it's criminally underrated.
I agree, right? It's the best season.
It's so good.
Okay, but
it's unbelievable. But the last 5 episodes, 4 or 5 episodes, the criminals are always one step ahead of the police procedure in this way that is truly stylish. It's like it sets it up so that every episode, you're just one step behind, one step behind, one step behind, one step behind. And it's fabulous.
And just when you think that the investigators have stopped being a step behind, just when you think they've cracked the case and they're about to bring it home, you find out that no, they're still a step behind and it didn't work. Also, so there's a lovely thing that happens in that season where the character whose name I can't think of off the top of my head, but he's the guy who's kind of an incompetent goof, and he's like somebody's nephew, right?
Yeah.
And he gets assigned to their investigation in the first season because he's an incompetent goof and they're trying to undermine the investigation, right?
Yes.
And in the second season, he's in this new investigation and he's the one who's like, wait, I want this to be like last season.
Yes.
He's like, he's realizing that the people who he's been assigned to work with are kind of being lazy and they're not really following the procedures and they're not dogged and diligent. They're not basically following the tropes of a procedural. And he complains to, you know, his uncle, who's a high-ranking official in the police force, about it so he can get a better team. And that's what you were talking about, you know, getting the team back together.
Right.
But there's a certain kind of self-awareness there where he wants it to be a police procedural. And it's much more like how police work actually works at first.
Prez.
Yes.
Roland Presbulewski.
Presbulewski. Thank you.
Played by the great Jim Trufrost. God love you. We miss you. You're fantastic.
Excellent character. Great performance. So Maya, what's your favorite procedural?
I think I'm going to have to go with, although The Wire is a very close second, I'm going to have to go with All the President's Men. It's
Excellent.
A journalism procedural. And I have this weird thing that I've been doing when I'm working in the studio where instead of listening to music, I'll like listen to one movie. Like I'll have a movie playing in the background over and over and over again. It's really weird. I kind of don't know what that's about. And one of the movies that I can do that with, so I've now listened to it like hundreds of times, is All the President's Men. It is one of the most perfect screenplays of all time, written by William Goldman. And what's amazing about it is that when it came out, Watergate had just happened. Everybody knew that story. Everybody had read the book. Like there was nothing about it that was news. And yet the way that they show these two journalists, and not just the two journalists, but all of their editors and the kind of layers of how all of how this institution of journalism of the Washington Post works.
Yes.
Is riveting. And there are certain moments like one of their colleagues who's this woman is like, hey, I found out who wrote the Canuck report because this guy in the White House is trying to get her to go to bed with him and he brags about it. And there's this moment where this guy, they expose this guy as having said that he wrote the Canuck letter. He calls this woman journalist and she's with them and she immediately gets somebody to transcribe the conversation that they have. Like she's in on it too. All of the journalists, this is the most important thing in the world.
Yeah.
It's more important than their personal lives.
Yes.
It's more important than anything else. They are all this team with a set of different skills. And so much of the plot between Woodward and Bernstein is them learning as a team, when do we really have this story or not? Mm-hmm. And at first, Woodward is the one who's like, no, we don't have it yet. Mm-hmm. We don't have the facts yet. And Bernstein's like, no, it's obvious. It's got to be. He's like, there's no facts. And by the end of it, they're both this team where they're like, no, there's not fact yet. Okay, should we go get it this way? Okay, let's get it that way. And you've seen over the course of it, them learning how to work together to make sure that they really have it.
So I think it's very interesting that the examples we selected as our favorite procedurals are both examples where it's not a whodunit. The audience absolutely 100% knows whodunit from the start. It's all about the investigation, and the pleasure comes not from figuring out the mystery, but the pleasure comes from watching people, watching professionals follow the clues from A to B to C and follow the correct procedures to make sure they have the story, to make sure they have sufficient evidence.
To then pin down
Yes.
the criminal.
Yes, it's about pinning down the criminal, right? Because if you come to the courtroom without sufficient evidence, it doesn't do you any good to know who did it if you don't have that evidence in your pocket. And it doesn't do you any good to publish an article about something you know happened unless you have enough evidence to substantiate your claim. So, why the hell are we talking about procedurals?
Well, I noticed that the pleasure that I was getting from any article that I was reading about the Mueller investigation, mm-hmm. which is the investigation by the FBI into potential Russian interference in the election. I mean, really, the Mueller investigation started with the firing of Jim Comey,
yes.
the FBI director who was himself getting into this investigation. So Jim Comey was fired. The investigation was kind of handed to Mueller. And I noticed that I was most excited by news articles that were pushing that button of the procedural, of
yes.
procedural narrative to me. That was like getting me like so involved because the Mueller team has been really amazing about not leaking anything. So all of the information we have is by other journalists and what we construct from the few bits of information that we have. So in some ways, I've been building a procedural from how I watch the Mueller investigation. So we have a two-layer investigation. We have the investigation, and then we have the investigation into the investigation.
Right, as we sort of like look at whatever clues are available to try to piece together what the investigators are doing, what Mueller and his team are actually doing.
So I was thinking, like, what are the specific flavors of this procedural that I'm writing in my head when I write this this story about the Mueller investigation? What are the particularly pleasurable ways? What builds it? And I think you have to start with Mueller himself as a figure.
Yes.
He's this, like, you know, strong-jawed cipher. Like, he's Mr., you know, head of the FBI forever. He was originally appointed by a Republican. He is a Republican. Obama had to get a special law by Congress to, like, keep him in there because he is so, has such unimpeachable integrity.
Right.
You feel like whatever the truth is, he will find it. And his own opinions will not get in the way.
In every news story, they have to mention how Mueller is universally respected by people from both parties. Like, he's nonpartisan, he's dogged and diligent, but not biased. Like, he's just the perfect procedural hero.
He's also kind of hot. I'm sorry, he's got that sort of, like,
no, he's not. He's not hot.
Oh, he's totally hot.
No.
He's totally like, strong-jawed, kind of. No, like, Jim Comey is not hot.
Oh, God,
Mueller,
no.
I think he's kind of hot. I think Mueller's kind of hot.
I don't want to. I'm not going to judge you for thinking that. I'm just going to say that I disagree. But he is a Republican. And while I do deeply respect his ability to put politics aside and adhere to the law, that's not sexy enough to overcome being a Republican.
Sure. No, that makes sense. But I think that that's partially why his coverage is so problematic. At the end of the day, he's this, like, old white guy Republican. So what is it that you're like, oh, daddy's going to fix it? You know, like, I'm not saying that these pleasures are without their problems. I'm just saying that I've noticed that this is part of it. You have this lead figure who there's almost nothing about him as a person. All he is this lighthouse of unimpeachable integrity.
And that fits in with the police procedural and the general procedural so perfectly. It is not about him as a person. It's about how we know that he is going to execute the step-by-step procedures required of him. He's going to adhere to the law and he's going to do it correctly. It's not about him as a person. And so it's gratifying to think of it that way.
And the FBI is a problematic institution.
Right. No, no.
Deeply,
no.
Deeply. Like, let's,
FBI is our friend right now. when Comey was making fucking announcements about Hillary's emails, the FBI was a piece of shit. But right now we love the FBI. Get with the program, okay?
When the FBI was investigating the Black Panthers and completely just being fucking monsters. Anyway, part of it is that there's this feeling like Mueller himself will not be swayed by political pressure.
Right.
In fact, if anything, he will love to perform the fact that you cannot fucking politically pressure this guy. Like, oh, try it.
Narratively speaking, it's kind of beautiful that Comey got fired to set the stage for Mueller's hiring, because the reason Comey got fired is because he couldn't be swayed by political pressure.
That's right.
I mean, it's such a fucking great narrative where Comey is almost like a protege. He's no Mueller, but Mueller is his mentor and somebody who has informed how he approaches things.
Yes.
So Comey's doing this investigation and Trump does this, like, hey, but you know, you're going to drop this investigation, right? Wink, wink, whatever, nudge, nudge. And Comey, like a woman getting sexually harassed, is like, whatever you say, and then leaves and quickly types up what just happened for the record. But the point being that Comey tried to stick to his guns and recognize when someone was trying to sway him, and that led to his firing.
In this really explicit way, an obstruction of justice, like Trump being like, yeah, I fired him because of the Russia investigation. Like,
in this,
oh my God,
plainly criminal way. So Mueller gets appointed, which is like he's like the better version of Comey. So it creates a really interesting story arc that way.
It does, and it also makes it like you can't fire Mueller if the point of Mueller being there was that you fired Comey for doing this investigation. Like, you can't do that twice. So first you have Mueller, but then, and I know this was when I first noticed the real procedural quality of how I was reading this investigation.
Yeah.
Then you have his team of very special lawyers.
Right.
And I read every article about fucking Robert Mueller's team of lawyers that he hired. And that's when I was like, oh my God, this is a procedural, because he was like, and then they brought on this person whose expertise is foreign financial transactions.
Right.
And you have this person whose expertise is this. And you have this like list of these lawyers who are all like, I mean, boring as dirt. Like, they don't have a personality. They are only their expertise.
They are their expertise. Yes. And as we look at who's being brought onto the team and what their expertises are, we start to piece together what the investigation must be doing, what they must be looking at.
Yes, it's some of the only evidence that we have for what's going on. And I feel like, and that is like so exciting. And I remember especially recently, there's this one specific lawyer that they just hired, just even like a month ago, after their initial big team of hotshot people. So Mueller has added yet another prosecutor to his team who specializes in money laundering cases. Okay, before joining Mueller's team, this attorney, Kyle Freeney, was leading the Department of Justice's charge to seize profits from the movie Wolf of Wall Street amidst allegations that Riza Aziz, the co-founder of the film's production company, used $64 million of stolen funds from the Malaysian government to bankroll the movie. Now, listen, this was the line that like hits every procedural button. The dispute that she was pulled off of is currently the DOJ's most high-profile money laundering case. And she was one of only four attorneys representing the U.S. government. So that they're saying, okay, this is the DOJ's most high-profile money laundering case.
Wow.
She's one of only four lawyers on it, and Mueller pulls her off to bring her money laundering expertise to this investigation. I'm like, it's amazing.
It's amazing, right? I mean, especially because we all know that, you know, regardless of Russian collusion or whatever else, we know there's money laundering. Like, it's Trump. Like, we know there's money laundering. Like, it's so obvious. And so it's exciting. It actually makes me think of Rachel Maddow. This is what made me think of the procedural, because for a while I was listening to her podcast, which is her show every night. They just play the audio as a podcast the next day. And every episode was kind of following the same format. It was like, today, the Mueller investigation did blank. And then deep dive into what it means and what it could lead to and the implications and the connections. And like, credit to Rachel Maddow. Like, she is great, or her team of people are great at uncovering those connections.
Well, and that's what journalism at its best has been doing with this investigation, is because what it's saying is, these are the signals that we're getting, and this is what it signifies. When they bring this kind of lawyer, it means they're looking at these kind of crimes. And I feel like these are the moments that we get sort of annotated by journalism. Journalism is annotating this, which then can put us in the middle of it. Like, oh my God, they made that decision. I wonder what I cannot believe, like, what made them make that choice?
This is exactly what you were saying a moment ago about the sort of investigation into the investigation, the two-layer thing, where like, all we know about the Mueller investigation is that a grand jury has subpoenaed Flynn's bank records. So then it becomes like, well, what does that mean? Well, and the journalists can help you get into this question of like, what does that mean? First of all, like, what's necessary to get a grand jury to the point where they're issuing a subpoena? And then why would you subpoena those records and what could they reveal? And it's like really entertaining. It's perverse to say so, because it's actually an incredibly serious topic, and the crimes here are serious violations of all our democratic principles, but it's so entertaining to watch unfold.
But don't you think that's part of why it's entertaining, is because what you want in any kind of narrative and any kind of procedural narrative is high stakes. And that's why medical procedurals are high stakes. It is literally life and death.
Yes.
So here, our procedural is like the Constitution of the United States, like the very existence of the Republic. It's being like played out. And I think that that's part of why it's incredibly engaging. And just in terms of other leak proofness, like when you found out that they had raided Manafort's house, and yet somehow that didn't get reported in the news until like a month after it happened. So you go, God, these people know how to keep their fucking mouths shut. That's awesome.
The whole Papadopoulos confession, that guy, they were talking to that guy for months. It's been months. They've been interviewing him. They got a confession out of him. He's been cooperating. Nobody had any reporting on that I'm aware of. It just came out on Monday like, oh yeah, and this guy just like confessed all this shit.
yes. And actually, in terms of things that I really loved in terms of my recent faves, there's this journalist who he's a white collar journalist, and he's on Twitter, and he's been talking about what it all means. His name is Renato Mariotti. He's a candidate for Illinois Attorney General. He's a former federal prosecutor.
Okay.
So he's a partner at this law firm. So he knows what it means. And reading his breakdown of the Papadopoulos indictment is amazing. And there are lawyers who are there who are like breaking down, like, if he went this many months between when he was first interviewed and like finishing this plea, that means that they were negotiating this plea for 3 months, and he must have had to do something for the investigation, including potentially wearing a wire. Like, that this is something that must have had to happen. I mean,
okay, wait, who's the name of this person, this reporter that you're talking about?
His name is Renato Mariotti.
And where can people read his breakdown?
They can read it on Twitter.
Okay.
He's also all over the news.
Okay.
And he's doing a really wonderful job. There's also a beautiful article, we'll put the link on our website, where they asked 11 different legal experts, 11 different lawyers, to read the indictments and say what stood out for them. And one of the lawyers talks about how, like, the conversation of where the grand jury was going to be held is very interesting, because Manafort has a house in Virginia. Most people thought the grand jury was in Northern Virginia, but the grand jury was in Washington, D.C., because that's where the crimes are that they're trying to uncover. And there are things like, in the court date that happened on Monday, the representative for the Mueller investigation said, this is only a very small part of our ongoing investigation.
Of course. It's so entertaining.
Not only is it this procedural, it's a procedural that's not like, it's not going to end. It's like, that's part of the pleasure of it. Like, oh, there's more. Oh.
But similar to the procedurals that are our faves, we know who done it. We know exactly what the crime was. We know exactly who did it. It's just, we're just waiting for the investigators to uncover enough evidence to be able to go before a judge or grand jury or whatever and make their case.
Forget the myths that the media has created about the White House. The truth is, these are not very bright guys.
there's also the very sexy thing of not knowing what evidence they've already uncovered.
I know.
Like, that's the thing where you're like, oh my God, they know so much more than we do right now. What I wouldn't give to be a fly on the wall in that fucking room where they're like breaking it down. And I feel like there are so many moments where we get hints of it. And you know they have all of it. So there's the Donald Trump Jr. Manafort meeting with the woman lawyer who's like probably a KGB agent that they met during the election. But then also Donald Trump Jr. is saying to, like, in emails to Jared Kushner and Paul Manafort that she has some dirt on Hillary. We should have a meeting with her. And then they have a meeting. And so all the stuff that we know that looks so damning to us, all the stuff that we know from journalists, you know that Mueller knows. And you know that they are using this to construct this grand narrative.
Papadopoulos, in his confession, said that, like, the Russians reached out to him and said, we have emails, right? We have dirt on Hillary. It's emails. And then, like, a month later, maybe 2 months, Trump was on TV saying, Russia, you should release her emails. Like, again, it's like The Wire or All the President's Men. Like, we know who done it.
Yeah, we do, but we are watching to wait for these experts to unfold their procedure. And this week's indictments absolutely were peak that, and that's why they're so satisfying, because in the indictment we see what information they have laid out. And many of the lawyers who are talking about it say that, like, it's very detailed for an indictment, which isn't unusual, but Mueller would not be so detailed unless he had the evidence to back up every claim.
Right.
And so you're like, and that,
because he's our thorough, square jaw, diligent hero who, yes, will always dot his I's and cross his T's
with his team of experts.
Yes.
We're each experts in their own way. So we have the money laundering guy, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act guy. We have the guy, everybody is there for something. So I feel like I'm really, like, completely surrendered to it. I don't think any procedural could be as satisfying anymore as this real life one that we are getting to witness right now.
I can't wait to watch the next episode. So we do have a hot sauce award to give away. If it's not obvious already, Maya, who are we giving our hot sauce award to this week?
Girl, we are giving our hot sauce award to the Mueller investigation for their discipline and their tenacity and how fucking organized they are, and that they haven't leaked a damn thing. And then they, like, drop all this indictment on us.
It was amazing.
Hot sauce.
Honestly, the leak proofness, and the way that, despite all of the journalists looking into it, despite all the speculation, like, people really did not know a lot of what was revealed this week. And it just felt like a bomb.
I can't say this, you know, publicly, but once we're off the air, I'm going to tell you about what I've heard about how they get so leak proof.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm not going to share it. I'm just going to say that I heard a thing. It's interesting. You guys can guess. That's your procedural drama.
So, well done, Mueller, and your whole investigative team. Keep it up. We look forward to the next chapter.
Yeah, absolutely. We're ready for the next episode. We're ready for the next season.
So, Maya, you have a recommendation for our listeners this week.
My recommendation this week is for a woman who wrote a book that is everything we could ever hope to do, Karina Chicano. She was one of the main film and TV critics of Salon for many years. And this year she came out with a book that I finally just read called You Play the Girl, on Playboy Bunnies, Stepford Wives, Train Wrecks, and Other Mixed Messages. And it's this beautiful book that's about these different sort of stereotypes and characters that women portray, and then her own personal relationship with being or not being those things, and the ways in which those characters shape how we as women coming up in our lives understand what our choices are.
That title is amazing.
And I have to say, as good as the title is, the book backs it up. It is like chapter by chapter, well, just a whole chapter on the sort of bunny and the Playboy bunny character. She makes the really dazzling insight that I'm really not over, actually. She talks about how when she grew up, she thought Playboy was just the performance of the way masculinity was, and that feminism was in response to that. And then she said that she was realizing that actually Playboy's masculinity was itself a response to feminism. It's not the way that masculinity always was. And she traces the fact that the rise of the feminist movement and the rise of Playboy happened at exactly the same time. It's so incredible. It's such an excellent book. And yet she still takes these moments to connect it to the ways in which these characters shaped her understanding of her reality. It's awesome.
Excellent. Well, we have to check that out from Karina Chocano, right? Is that the name?
Yes.
It's called You Play the Girl on Playboy Bunnies, Stepford Wives, Trainwrecks, and Other Mixed Messages.
And now, anything that we want to pimp of our own projects?
Well, let me see. I have my webcomic, as always, at gynostar.com. You can check it out.
And I have my show that's up at the Grand Central Arts Center in Santa Ana, the Dupna Foroy. It's going to be up till January 14th. I also am in a group show of incredible women artists. I'm so excited about this. The show is called Between Nothingness and Infinity. It's showing at the Naval Gallery in LA, 1611 South Hope Street. It's opening this Saturday night from 6 to 9 p.m. if you want to come. And if you end up in Santa Ana and you want to go to the Grand Central Arts Center, let me know. That's what's going on.
If you want to reach out to us, you can via email. We are saucepodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter @saucepodcast. And we're also on iTunes. You don't have to write a review, although it'd be great if you did. And you also praised us a lot, talked about how awesome we are. But regardless, just give us the full number of stars available, and that's all you need to do.
And we're really looking forward to your thoughts about the Mueller investigation, how it connects to the procedural and narrative pleasure.
What is your favorite procedural film or television show or short story or book? We want to hear your thoughts.
Absolutely.
So reach out.
All right. See you next week.
Bye-bye.